T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Dr. Michael Cummings is with us live this morning, Vice Chair of Psychiatry for the University of Buffalo and Associate Medical Director of ECMC. All week long, we are looking at gun violence, and you can't talk about gun violence, Dr. Cummings, without talking about mental health. How big a problem is the stigma? People who suffer from mental health are violent. How big a problem is that?
Oh, I think it's a huge problem, and it gets perpetuated, ironically, from really all walks of life and both sides of the aisle, particularly after a mass shooting event. There is a modest increase in violence in some mental health disorders, but it's modest. And the reality of it is people with a serious mental illness are 10 times more likely to be victims of violent crimes than be perpetrators.
It's maybe a case of overgeneralization and maybe not enough public education, because we see, and this is typically when talking about some of these mass shooting events, right? And we're always talking about mental health because, I mean, it stands to reason what, you know, perfectly, you know, sane person could carry out such a heinous act. But we kind of throw out the term mental health as a catch-all when, I mean, it's probably not the right thing to do, but people are kind of at a loss for words. What would the correct response be? What are the correct questions to ask at a time like that?
You know, so there are certainly some risk factors that increase someone's likelihood of violence with a mental illness. Severe mania, command hallucinations where you're hearing voices telling you to do things, or having significant history of antisocial traits. But mental illness in of itself is not a predictor of violence or particularly gun violence. What is a history of past violence, particularly domestic violence, substance abuse disorders, being exposed to persistent history of physical sexual abuse. So and a lot of those things overlap with individuals with mental illness. So it's a confusing conversation. But the thought that solely having a mental illness, even a serious one, putting you at higher risk of violence or gun violence is simply not correct.
New York State has a red flag law. It removes guns from a person who may present a danger to themselves or to others. Is this something that's working, in your opinion? Do you support this?
Well, I have professional and personal feelings, I suppose. I grew up in, you know, the foothills of the Adirondacks. Every family was a hunting family. So I certainly, you know, acknowledge our right to own guns and for appropriate, educated gun users, you know, there's no reason for not to. I think there's certainly also people who probably should not own guns based on past history of other things. And, you know, I mean, it's a tough question, but the way that the SAFE Act actually works, and you may or may not realize this, so I'll just go through it super quick, is anyone who is at risk of self-harm to self or others and seen by a mental health professional, which is defined as a physician, a nurse, a clinical social worker, a psychologist, technically could and should be reported, but they get reported to local mental health authorities, who then look at the case. Then they get, if they feel that there's a risk, it goes to Albany. If that individual owns a firearm, then that gets reported to the state police, who then subsequently have to report it to the local police to revoke the firearms and license. So you know, when you hear people talking about not willing to enforce it, it's that last piece that they're talking about. It's a pretty cumbersome process. It's a very cumbersome process. And the definition of risk to self or others, you know, it's not based on age. and it's not based on the actual evidence. So, you know, well over half the people who get transported to a psychiatric emergency room get transported based on one of those mandated reporters making that claim. And you can start thinking about exactly how many reports would have to happen versus how many actually do happen. So, you know, I think there's a reason to consider limiting gun ownership to certain individuals based on their own past history. I'm not certain the regulations that we have in New York State are particularly effective at doing that.
There's been this increased call to increase the presence or outright replace police presence at some of these, whether it's a shooting incident or whether it's just somebody who has a gun who might be in distress, with a mental health professional. Is that something you see helping a situation, hurting a situation? Is it a positive, you know, idea that, you know, might just need tweaking in, you know, actual practice? Where do you see this conversation as it stands right now?
Well, as I've said fairly publicly in the past, you know, I mean, I think having a formal partnership between mental health professionals and law enforcement is a wonderful idea. It works. It works successfully in places that do it well. Including locally in Cheektowaga and starting to work in Buffalo in the very early stages. The people who are developing these programs here, no one is saying we're replacing police officers with social workers. It's really a partnership and determining who's right for which role. Mental health professionals are very good at de-escalating people and they do it all day long, but law enforcement professionals are trained specifically to de-escalate significant violent situations. So figuring out how to do it together is I think, a very positive step and one that both groups should, you know, gladly welcome. I think it's more rhetoric when people are talking about replacing police with, and I know that some people are saying just that, but the mental health professionals are not saying that.
You know, on speaking of mental health, Dr. Cummings, at the Olympics, there's a huge focus right now on mental health. After Simone Biles pulled out of team competition and now the all-around competition, citing her mental health, you know, as a doctor in this area, what did you think of that?
Well, you know, I mean, my first response was probably similar to everyone else's. It was one of almost disappointment, you know, because we'd like to see great athletes do great things. And I just read an article this morning that someone posted on social media talking about, if everyone remembers the Carrie Strug Olympics, where she had the fractured ankle and did the final vault and, you know, won the gold medal and all that stuff. And we think about it, it was wonderful. And then you kind of hear the entire conversation between her and her coach, where she's basically begging not to go out and do another vault. And he kind of convinces her. You think about that in terms of the significant levels of abuse that are still coming to light in, you know, USL Olympic gymnastics. And, you know, a lot of people would argue that it was a pretty brave step to say, you know what, my mental health right now is precluding me from doing this safely, and I can't do it. If she had fractured 3 ribs, no one would have said anything. And that's really where the stigma is associated with mental illness, is you're seen as weak, and we actually see ourselves as perhaps weak by taking care of something that if it were physical that someone could see, no one would ever question it. And yet the disability in the United States for major depression alone is more than all disability associated with all cancer and all heart disease. So it's a huge epidemic. And it was, you know, to be honest, I think it was a very brave thing to do and sends a very good message. But I understand why fans, particularly in the moment, had mixed feelings about it.
You know, I think there was a lot of positivity coming as a result of this. There was a lot of support shown Simone Biles' way. I mean, so much so that, you know, I was looking at this yesterday thinking like, wow, this public opinion has really changed on this issue from even 5 or 10 years ago. But then I'm thinking, well, you know, what if this were Josh Allen in the AFC Championship game? What the response would have been then? And it probably wouldn't have been the same. So maybe it's not quite there yet, the, you know, acceptance of mental health issues as, you know, the same as you mentioned, some other physical issue that you might have.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, awareness is a wonderful thing. Action to fix something is far more important. We are still incredibly underfunded in all aspects of mental health care, in all aspects of care and services for those with developmental disabilities and all aspects of supporting the frontline staff members who work with both. There's less stigma. People are more likely to talk about, individuals, professionals, actors, more likely to talk about their struggles with mental illness. But we're far from that being an even playing field with the conversation of diabetes, heart disease, cancer.
Dr. Michael Cummings is our guest live this morning, Vice Chair of Psychiatry for UB and Associate Medical Director of ECMC. We've been talking about gun violence and mental health and Olympians. And now I want to ask you, mask mandates are coming back in parts of the country. Mask anxiety has been a thing. Do you worry about this new phase for the country?
The whole process at this point, we've really gone from a public health emergency and things that need to be dealt in a very public health manner to more and more one of personal responsibility or lack thereof. And I respect anyone's right to get vaccinated or not get vaccinated. It's certainly their decision. That's why we're America. However, there's other mandates similarly. I suppose the concept of not getting vaccinated because you don't want to put something potentially unsafe in your body would hold water so long as the individuals are also not, purposely putting things that we know are unsafe in their body, drugs, tobacco, alcohol, et cetera. The people who are getting the infection are people who are unvaccinated. The people who have vaccines, when they test positive, probably test at a very low load, and if they weren't being tested, they wouldn't have a positive, and you wouldn't know that they had symptoms. So it's a struggle. I do think a lot of people are anxious. We felt like we turned the corner. The thoughts of going in the other direction, as some places have already done so, the thoughts of how it's going to potentially affect our kids who are getting ramped up to actually have a full year of school. I think there's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of folks who think they're at very high risk even if they're vaccinated, which is simply not true. So I expect we'll have a little bit of a resurgence. I can tell you as a hospital official, the people we're seeing are not nearly as sick who are testing positive. Not to say that there's individuals who are not, but it's really at this point about getting people vaccinated so that they're protecting themselves.
One of the, I think, main questions people will have and who this affects the most is kids. You mentioned there, where part of that CDC recommendation was everybody in school, from vaccinated teachers all the way to kids, wear a mask at all times while in school. And, it's something that we've been kind of pointing to time and time again is, have we been able to have, has it at all happened a real discussion about the benefits and burdens of face masks in schools? And, some of it's not... It's really easy to say, well, just wear a mask, what's the big deal? But no one is really taking seriously, it seems, making these decisions, some of the impact this is having on kids in school. I know you work with kids. How have you seen this? And, do you think that's a conversation that needs to happen?
Well, I think it is. Yes, the Delta variant, it spreads quicker. There's higher viral loads. And by definition, anyone under 12 can't be vaccinated now. They typically have a very low disease course. It's easy to say mask, no mask. It's easy to say all these other things. It comes down to, closing schools may have made sense at some point, but it comes also down to, at what cost are we talking about? We could prevent all diabetes, not all diabetes, but, significant amounts of diabetes by just seriously limiting all food that is bad for you to individuals. We would never consider doing that. And I know this isn't the same thing, but you miss the fact that, masks are difficult for a lot of kids to wear. They are, and certainly those with developmental disabilities really can struggle with this, particularly those with autism and sensory things. But it's also the potential lack of interaction, social interaction, young kids are learning how to understand body language and other things like that, which is very difficult to do when you can't see someone's face in a preschool setting. So, there are a lot of issues with perpetual mask wearing that whether they equal out the damage associated with another surge of infection is hard to know. But to simply say that there's no big deal about wearing masks is very simplifying it. And I think it is going to cause, you know, more struggle, more nervousness in school settings, more nervousness within teachers, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, our kids have been out of school for long enough, so hopefully they can return in as normalistic manner as possible.
Dr. Cummings, we appreciate your time, as always. Dr. Michael Cummings, Vice Chair of Psychiatry for UB and Associate Medical Director at ECMC.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.